Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and today it's my pleasure to be joined by a friend of mine. It's a guy I met probably 4 or 5 years ago at the National Speakers Association here in Pittsburgh. He's been someone that has been somewhat of a mentor of mine, and I'm glad not just to have him as a colleague, I'm glad to have him as someone that I count as a friend as well. His name is Joe Mull. He is a CSP. He teaches leaders how to be better bosses and cultivate commitment in the workplace. He is the author of 2 books, Cure for the Common Leader and No More Team Drama, and the host of the forthcoming Boss Better Now podcast. Joe, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend. I'm so glad we're able to do this.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. Let me just kind of, I'd like to start with the backstory on kind of where did you come from? Because you're out there, and CSP, for those not familiar, is a certified speaking professional, which is a very high honor and designation, shows that you have got your stuff together. But you weren't always a speaker. So kind of, can you share with us the backstory on where did you come from before you were doing what you're doing now?
Sure. What's funny is that my story starts right as I was leaving high school, because my background really is in music and theater. I discovered a love for singing and performing during my high school years and ended up going to college and getting a performing arts degree. And so that's really the start of my journey. That was the goal. I'm a song and dance man at heart. I wanted to be on Broadway. And I spent 4 years studying for that kind of work. And by the time I finished college, I had done more than 300 different kinds of performances in all sorts of venues and in all sorts of different kinds of productions. But while I was in college, I also fell in love with student affairs. I was an RA. I was a fraternity president. I was doing a lot with leadership development on campus. And so when I graduated from college, I wanted a job. I just wanted a little bit of money in my pocket. I had a car that was held together with duct tape, and I just thought I need a paycheck. And, you know, the newspaper was not full of ads looking for a music theater tenor with a high salary and benefits. So
right.
At that point, I ended up stepping into the field of student affairs, and I spent 10 years there, and I got a master's degree in education from Ohio University, and worked at a couple colleges and universities across the country, and eventually became the head of health education and promotion at the University of Pittsburgh, in my hometown of Pittsburgh, and was doing a lot of program design and development. Every job I've ever had me in front of a room, designing programming, creating content to share with an audience to help them get better at something. And so about 10 years into my career in student affairs, I was ready for my next step, which logically would have been an assistant dean of students kind of role. And I realized, though, that stepping into that role would take me away from the kind of program development and design work that I love so much. So I looked around and I accepted an entry-level training job at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center and spent a number of years there and eventually became the head of learning and development for physician services. So I managed training for one of the largest physician groups in the country. And did every imaginable kind of training you could think of, right? New hire orientation and manager onboarding and software training and customer service training. But that's really where I fell in love with leadership development and management training. And so I went out on my own about 7 years ago to do that kind of work on my own terms.
That's cool. It's amazing that you and I didn't cross paths before this, because I was doing some work for UPMC as well in their training department. And
really?
Doing a lot of work with new hire stuff about diversity and disability awareness, which was a really cool thing. So, yeah, we've been swimming in the same pool and not even
apparently
realizing it. Yeah. Excellent. So you're doing a lot of work for, you know, training. And what I'm assuming is that it's kind of all developing skills, but it's more than just having skills. It's having an expertise in a given area. So your area is kind of, it's leadership, it's healthcare, it's that area. Tell me a little bit about what your experience was as you're working in that healthcare arena. What are you learning and what are you seeing? And then what are you feeling like is the message that you're sharing?
Hmm. You know, when I was working with a lot of the frontline managers at UPMC, they were thirsty for any kind of content they could get their hands on about how to better manage people. And I was struck by how much of that I had been given in my career in student affairs, right from the jump. And I realized that even at 30, 33 years old, I had come to that organization with a lot more experience and background in what it meant to manage people than a lot of the folks who were being asked to do it or had been doing it even for 10, 15 years. And so I took what I learned and continued to dive into a deeper understanding of leadership development and management training and just continued to package together content to help those folks develop a mix of knowledge and skills to get better at managing people. And what we would typically do is try to reverse engineer content for them around the problems they were facing. So if we had a lot of leaders who were telling us that they had a lot of conflict on their teams, or you know, they had folks who couldn't play nice together in the sandbox, then we would create programming to help leaders understand the steps they need to take and the skills they need to develop to resolve those kinds of issues on their teams. And in a way, we became a kind of rapid response team. It was a really fun time in my career to just sort of be dropping in and figuring out, you know, what are the problems? How do we help these folks solve them? What kind of content can we create for them? And as the years went by and I kept doing that more and more, you see certain themes and patterns emerge, right? That mm-hmm. that over and over again, people, especially in leadership roles, are facing the same kinds of problems. And so from there, I really started to develop what I guess would be my own philosophy of what leaders need to be successful in the role. And so now, when people ask me what I do for a living, and you alluded to this a little bit at the top of the podcast, I teach leaders how to be better bosses, to be a version of themselves that actually equips the people on their team to be successful. My favorite definition of the word leadership is that leadership is creating the conditions for people to thrive. And so I believe the best bosses are those folks who go out in the world and see their number one job as figuring out what do my people need to be at their best every day and then fighting like crazy to provide that.
I love the idea. And basically what you're learning is kind of twofold. Number one, people are people no matter where you are, and whether you're in the academic setting or whether you're in a healthcare setting, you have people who are leading groups, leading organizations, and trying to help their people succeed. And so what you're doing is you're taking some of the skills that you're learning in leadership from that academic world and kind of universalizing them. I don't know if there is such a word as universalizing, but
I'll go with it. I'm good with it.
Okay. So you're universalizing them to say the problems, the skills of leadership are kind of the same across the board. And yet there are unique and distinctive ways in which they show up in each arena. Is that a proper understanding of kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, and the way that some of those problems manifest themselves may be different based on the people involved or the environment that they're in. But oftentimes, the same kinds of core issues show up over and over again, and the same kinds of universal skills and knowledge are necessary. So, for example, I think the essential leadership skill that bosses at all levels need to develop is coaching skills. And, you know, there are a lot of leaders who believe that they understand what it means to be a coach or who work to try to deploy coaching skills, but they actually aren't truly coaching. They're just giving feedback or giving advice. Whereas coaching is asking the right questions in the right order to create self-actualization. So when we have employees coming to us with the same questions over and over again, as managers, we're often hardwired to just give them the answer and tell them what to do so that they can get back to what they're doing and I can get back to what I'm doing. Mm. But like the old adage says, if you teach a man to fish, et cetera, et cetera. I always butcher that one, Rob, so I'm not going to try to get it right. But the coaching skill goes hand in hand with that, because if you take that moment when that employee is standing in your doorway and says, hey, how are we supposed to handle X, Y, Z? And you stop and you say, well, what options do you see?
Right.
Where do you think we should start? And it's, you're not playing gotcha with that person. You're not testing them. It's not, let's see if you remember what we talked about at the staff meeting. It's an authentic, sincere desire to help walk them through that process of evaluating their options and choosing the best course of action so that the next time they have that question, maybe before they come to you as the manager and ask, they stop and ask themselves, wait, what options do I have? Okay, that's the direction that I'm going to go in. So one of those universal skills for sure would be coaching.
Okay, what you're talking about, two things, number one, that jump out to me. I don't know if you can have two things as number one, but the first thing that jumps out to me is I'm one of those people that I understand all of the common phrases that are out there. I enjoy purposely misstating them, you know, so it's half of one, six dozen of the other, and you can lead a horse to water, but you can't look in his mouth, all of these things. And then I realize that because of my disability, people sometimes think I'm stupid anyway. And so here I am, and I think it's funny what I'm doing, and people are looking at me, and they're like, man, that poor guy, he has no idea what he's talking about.
It's like an underhanded dad joke when you do it that way, though.
The other piece of that, though, is the amazing amount of learning that can be done not by telling people things, but by asking people questions.
Right.
And as you ask them questions, it empowers them to think for themselves and to begin to build their own set of problem-solving abilities. I think that that's kind of what you're talking about exactly, right?
Absolutely. And even when you dive into the psychology of human development, the role that influence and autonomy plays in the health and overall wellness of people can't be overstated. When you look at, you know, our own hierarchy of needs, right? The very base of that is food, clothing, and shelter. And then right above that is relationships and companionship. And then right above that is choice and influence. And you know, when folks are going to work every day and spending most of their waking hours executing on behalf of someone else or some other organization, the more we're able to grant them autonomy and influence in that work, the more we're going to activate them and create some sense of fulfillment. And if you don't believe that that's true, ask anybody who has ever been micromanaged in a job how soul-crushingly awful it is, because certain parts of your brain and certain parts of your heart just start to turn off. But when you do the work in such a way that you get the chance to influence, you get the chance to say, what is the best way to do this? Or how would I do this? Or you're allowed the time and space to get to your end product in a way that might even be different than how your boss would do it, you actually get closer to cultivating commitment.
It's so funny that you say that, because one of my first jobs, the office building was having some work done on it. And so we were in temporary quarters, and my desk was literally right outside of my boss's office. And every phone conversation that I was on, it was a three-way call, because there was what I was saying, there was the person on the other end, and then there was my boss hollering from her office things that I should be saying as well, and giving me, and it was just like, like you said, I hated when the phone rang, because I knew it was just going to be, and I believe that in her heart, she was trying to be helpful.
Right.
But it was something like, teach me how to handle this on my own, because you breathing down my neck and giving me all the answers just drives me crazy. And you're right that it crushes that spirit of, commitment and that spirit of even feeling valued.
Right.
So you talked a little bit about what leaders do. What are the things that you would say to leaders that they need to know about themselves, or what are the skills that they need to have for themselves?
So really, if you think about asking someone to go and lead an organization or manage people or have vision or execute strategy or all of the above, there are three big buckets of stuff, to be really ambiguous, that they need to bring with them. The first is self-awareness, the second is knowledge, and the third is skills. So leadership begins with self-awareness. Do I understand my own style, my personality, and what parts of my style and personality tend to rise to the surface, and how do other people experience my style and personality? And maybe most importantly, where does my style and personality work for me and where does it work against me? Mm. I hear a lot of new leaders proclaim that because they've had a really bad boss, that for them has been a masterclass in leadership because they know what not to do. And they say, I'm going to go into this role and I'm just going to be the kind of boss that I needed or that I wanted to have. And I'm not going to do any of the stuff that this other person did. And that actually isn't going to be a path to success because not everybody is like you, right? You'll be a terrific fit for the people who are just like you. But the truth is our own style and approach and our personality, the way we communicate, how we prioritize, organize information, connect, build relationships, all of those things, the way that we do it, aren't necessarily going to reach everyone on our team. So we've got to figure out how to flex our style to meet people where they are. So that's the first bucket. The second bucket that I identified as knowledge is that leaders have to have an understanding of the kind of environment and conditions that people are most likely to thrive in. And so we've made a real historical shift in the workplace from the industrial age and where manufacturing was driving jobs, and it was a very command and control environment. When you have to stand in a line and box widgets every day, nobody really cares about your feelings. And that worked for a couple of decades. And if we talk to our grandparents, that's the generation that experienced that in the workplace. But in a lot of places, the work is at a different level of sophistication, and you want people to bring a more sophisticated level of thinking to it and a more critical level of thinking to it. And so asking people to turn off their brains and not think and just respond in a command and control kind of way, it doesn't work. We have to grant people influence and autonomy. We have to figure out how to intrinsically motivate them. And so having a knowledge of what kinds of conditions we need to create in the workplace is the second bucket. The third bucket goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago of skills. Coaching is a skill, right? Giving feedback, having those performance management conversations, that's a skill. Time management, being able to write and communicate in a professional way, those are all skills that leaders need to bring to the workplace as well to be successful in a leadership role.
And then your job is to kind of help people to define those three buckets and to be able to fill those three buckets for themselves. I love it. And I think one of the things that you said that really resonates with me is that idea of not just finding what works for me. And I'm not going to say who it is in my family, but there's someone that I'm related to by marriage who feels that the entire
world... It's a mystery.
That the entire world would be a lot better place if everyone was just more like them. And so not everybody is like me, and my wife would be the first to tell you that that is a good thing. But let me just think about it from the perspective of when you're leading people, just because there's a way in which you like to be led doesn't necessarily mean that's the way that everybody else leads. And it actually then comes down to knowing your team, and you have to know who is on your team, what their personalities are, what their strengths are, what... I know that we talk about leadership style, but is there such a thing as a following style, Joe?
Great question. I don't know that there's such a thing as a following style, but we do have preferences for the kind of relationship we want to have with our boss and the kind of ways in which we want to be communicated with. So, for example, we know that some people prefer to take in information in a very logical and analytical way. And so the relationships that they want to have with their supervisor tend to be pretty transactional. It tends to be about competence. It tends to be about what role am I filling? What do I need from you? Now let me go execute. Whereas some other folks come into the workplace and they prefer to take in information based on values and beliefs and relationships. And so what's going to be important to them is forming a sophisticated relationship with their boss that goes beyond just the tasks and duties of the role. And so I'll give you a real world example to think about. There are some folks who, if they showed up for their first day of work at a new job, and their boss said, I'm taking you to lunch. We're going to really get to know each other. I want to learn all about you and find out about your life and your family and your likes and your dislikes. You know, this is just time for us to connect. There are some folks who would be thrilled at that. My boss cares about me as a person. They want to get to know me. They're invested. There are some other folks who are going to say, oh my goodness, get me out of here. Just tell me what you want me to do and leave me alone. Right. And they're going to sit there at that lunch feeling like that person is crossing boundaries, asking about their family, asking about their personal life. And it goes the other way as well. If you're someone who wants that kind of connection with your supervisor in the workplace, and you take a new job and your boss says, all right, we're going to meet Monday mornings at 9 a.m. to go over your work for the week, and then I'll expect a weekly report at the end of the week. I'm here if you need me. And that's the only kind of interaction that that employee gets to have with their boss. They're going to start to feel like this person isn't invested in me as a person. They don't care about me and what I bring to the table. And the truth is, most of the time, being a successful leader is figuring out where to exist in the middle of all of that.
Very, very interesting. This is kind of an odd question, but do you find that different personality types end up in different types of positions? For example, I'm thinking like an accountant to me seems like a very transactional person and not a real relational person. Do you find that there are different kinds of jobs that those personality styles are drawn to?
The numbers say yes, when you look across industry. But what I think is important to note is that while there may be correlation, there's not necessarily causation. So while maybe more analytical thinkers may gravitate toward accounting, that doesn't mean that folks who are more relationship oriented can't be world-class accountants. Of course they can. It's just that how they go about that work or the environment in which they want to do that work will be different or will need to be of a certain construct in order for them to be successful. I have a friend who spent a lot of years in accounting, wanted really nothing to do with accounting, but ended up in it because it was a good job. That's what they needed her to do. And she's whip smart. So she figured out how to do it for that organization. But she didn't like the work. And so what she would focus on is, what are my relationships here? If she had been in an environment where she loved the people and they were all a tight-knit family, then that would help her overcome maybe what was a less appealing set of duties related to accounting. Conversely, that if you have somebody whose personality is wired in such a way that they love accounting, they may endure some less appealing characteristics of the work environment because there is an alignment between their talents and strengths and gifts and interests and the work that they're asked to do every day.
I love it. I'm thinking this way, okay? And that is, I think it was John Maxwell that said something along the lines of, if you think that you're a leader, go for a walk and turn around. And if there's no one behind you, then you're just a man out on a walk or a person out on a walk. What would your definition be for a leader to say, how do I know if I am an effective leader? How is that going to show up in the group that I'm leading?
I think it goes back to what I said. Leadership, an effective leader is someone who creates the conditions necessary for people to be at their best every day. You know, they create the environment that lets people thrive. And the way that you know if you're not doing that would be the level of disengagement you have on your team, the level of turnover you have on your team. Are folks on fire at work, doing what it is they love to do, what they want to do? Is there an energy and a passion around it? Is your team one where people are trying to join it? Are people trying to become a part of your operation? That would be a pretty good indicator that you're creating that kind of environment. If people are leaving, if they're miserable, if they're just going through the motions, if there's a lot of drama, then there may be some work to do.
Got it. Listen, I could talk to you all day about this because you're a wealth of knowledge. I do like one quick question before we wrap up the interview, and that is, with everything that's going on right now with the pandemic and everything else, how is that affecting what's going on with leaders?
Oh, it's a great question, and as you can imagine, one that we're talking about quite a lot. you know, the environment right now for folks is one of constant distraction and juggling. If you think about it, prior to the pandemic, most people working in a full-time job would be able to step into their work environment, focus on their work for a full day, mm-hmm. and then step out of their work environment and return to home and where, you know, where we're doing homework and the laundry and the dishes and all of that stuff. But the reality of our current situation now is that everything has been mixed up in a big bowl together. People are working from home while trying to homeschool their kids, take care of a house they can't leave, and do their job at the same time. And it's too much for even the best among us. And so instead of having this big block of time in the middle of our workday where we can focus solely on work, we have a much shorter attention span, and the what one person can reasonably accomplish now in a work day for many folks has dramatically decreased. And so what I advise leaders to do right now is to ratchet up your compassion and your trust, right? I've seen so many stories of companies who are micromanaging the heck out of the virtual work environment, where every morning there's a virtual check-in and what did you do yesterday? And there's essentially a looking over the shoulder at what's happening in a virtual work environment. And, you know, we're going to stifle the commitment and the creativity that we need from our folks right now when the world is in such pain and there's so much difficulty. But if we can ask managers to have an open dialogue with their folks about what those people need from them as bosses right now, and then try to provide that, and then get out of the way and trust that those folks are doing the very best they can most of the time. And if there are days when they're not, if there are days when they're falling short, then we reach for compassion and we reach for understanding. And we say, hey, you know, I get that you had a homeschooling dumpster fire yesterday. It happens. I'm in the same boat. How can I support you? How can I help you? And let, you know, let's make today a better day. And you know, yesterday is what it was. So ratcheting up both the compassion and the trust is probably the most important thing right now.
I cannot imagine a better note to end on. Definitely wonderful. Joe, if people are looking to find out more about you, where can they find you on the web, or what's the easiest way to get you?
Sure. There's two places probably that I can point folks to. If you go to bossbetternow.com, you can subscribe to our email newsletter. We produce the Boss Better Now email newsletter 2 to 3 times a month with continuing education for leaders in all industries on how to be a better boss. And so folks will get our videos and articles and tools. And for workshops, training, speaking, you can go to my website, joemull.com, joemull.com.
Perfect. And I'll put all of that information, and I'll put some social media links in the show notes as well if people are looking to follow you or whatever you want to do.
Thanks, brother.
Oh, absolutely. So, Joe, now we are at my favorite part of the show. And this is not saying that I haven't enjoyed our interview to this point. You have indeed showed that you are smart. I have learned from you, but now it's 3 questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Hit me with it.
So what is the worst job you ever had?
Ooh, what is the worst job I ever had? I've never had a really bad job, Rob. I mean, there's nothing that springs to mind. I've had bad bosses. And so I guess that, you know, in alignment with what I talk about, I have left jobs because the boss wasn't good. I had a job at a public Midwestern university for 1 year where I worked for a really inexperienced supervisor. And, you know, felt at the beginning like she was really on my side and was trying to groom me to be successful in the role, only to come to find out that she was highly insecure, wasn't trusted by anybody else on staff. And so her attempt to build a relationship with me was really just about manipulating me to be one of her people versus everybody else. And that was really the first, you know, big people grown up job that I had after college. And right. So it was a pretty brutal learning experience.
Wow. Okay. How do you show your family that you love them? What's your love language to your family?
It's so funny that you asked that, because my sister said to me a couple of weeks ago, do you know that your love language is big gifts? And I said, I don't think I've ever thought about what my love language is. I don't think I've ever used that phrase. And she said that one of the things that is really important to me, obviously important to me, is family vacations and trips. And so when my wife and my kids and I, whenever we're going someplace, if we're going to go to the beach or if we're going to go camping, it's in our nature to try to reserve a place that has an extra room or two in it, where we invite, like we'll invite my sister and her husband and my niece to come, or we'll invite my in-laws to come, because we love being with them and we love including them and having that family time together. So I guess that's my love language, is planning fun family stuff where everybody can attend.
That's cool. Yeah. And just on a side note, my love language for my family is food. So whenever I'm going out and I'm doing a presentation somewhere, I'm always looking for a bakery or somewhere that I can pick something up and bring it home so that the family knows, while I was away, I was thinking of you and I brought you some delicious wonderfulness. Last question. That is, if we're making an omelet and we're going to call it the Joe Mull omelet, what goes in it?
Ooh, cheese. Everything is better with cheese.
What kind of cheese
goes in it? White cheddar.
Beautiful.
White cheddar cheese with some crumbled sausage, some onions. Let's put some bacon in there too. Can you have two meats? Yes, you
absolutely
can, Rob.
It's
you
the Joe Mull omelet. You can
That's
have whatever
right
you want in it.
So we're going to have some cheese, some sausage, some bacon. And then, now before I would have said some crumbled potatoes, but earlier this year I started a keto diet. I've lost almost 50 pounds. It's been a really transformative experience for me. So now we've replaced potato with cauliflower.
Nice.
That is the Joe Mull omelet.
Fantastic. Joe, thank you. Listen, I am a fellow keto guy, and it's wonderful. Anytime that you can go on a diet and it's like, I'm sorry, but all you can eat is like more meat. I'm like, oh right, really? Look, so difficult.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Wonderful. Hey, thanks for being on the show. I hope that folks are able to get a hold of you, and, you know, really, you've taught us a lot. To all my listeners, I will say thank you. Please leave us a review, send us some comments, let us know what you're thinking, and I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.